You are listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast, focusing on the changing nature of retirement today and the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition. Join host Joe Casey and learn from leading experts in the field and the stories of people who created interesting second acts as they share practical ideas and tips to create your own. Check out our website at retirementwisdom.com, where you can download our newsletter and other resources to learn more about how coaching can help you. The best way to support this podcast is to head over to Apple Podcasts and post a rating and a comment. It's easy and it's free. Join our conversations and get wiser about your retirement.
Welcome to today's Retirement Wisdom Podcast with host Joe Casey. This is Dennis Wussman joining Joe as we welcome our guest, Rabbi Laura Geller, who is the author of Getting Good at Getting Older, a book she co-wrote with her late husband, Richard Siegel. Rabbi Geller was recently named an Influencer in Aging by Next Avenue, the first public digital publication focused on issues for people over 50. An innovator and social activist, she was the fourth woman ordained as a rabbi in the United States and is Rabbi Emerita at Temple Emmanuel of Beverly Hills. Rabbi Geller, thank you so much for joining us today. Is there anything else you'd like to add to your bio?
Nope. I'm happy to be part of this conversation.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. And so your book is a comprehensive guide through the journey of aging. What motivated you and your late husband to write this book?
So about 8 years ago, as I was approaching retirement, I noticed that a huge number of congregants in my synagogue were boomers, and many were leaving the congregation because they felt that the focus on families with young children or frail old age didn't really speak to their needs. So we decided to have a listening campaign where we met over a period of 6 months with about 250 congregants in people's homes and asked people between the ages of about 60 and healthy late 70s how they feel about this stage of their life. It turns out that there's a new stage of life between midlife, when we raise our families and work on our careers, and frail old age. We are living 31 years longer than our grandparents did. But those 31 years are not tacked on to the end of our life, but actually are a new stage where we are active and energetic, and many of us have the resources and the talent to want to continue to be engaged in the world. And it's not clear how to do that in a world that sees growing older as just a process of decline. So we talked to all these congregants about how they feel about this stage of life and what their fears were and what their hopes were. The fears were that people would become invisible, that they would be isolated, that they would be without purpose, and they would be dependent. And the kinds of issues that emerged in the conversation were really fascinating. As our community is changing, as we get older and friends move away, kids too, with whom do I want to grow old? And in what kind of settings? Do I want to age in place? Do I want to move to a retirement community? Could I imagine sharing my house? And then how do I navigate changing relationships? How do I nurture long-term friendships? How do I make space in my life for new friends? How do I let go of toxic friendships? How do I deal with the difficult place between dealing with older parents and millennial children who may have come home to live because of changing economics? How do intimate partnerships change over time as our bodies change? And then the question, what do I have to do now to become that 85-year-old I someday hope to be? What work do I need to do on myself now when I'm in my 60s or in my 70s? And in our case, how can Jewish wisdom or spiritual practice help me do that? In other words, people wanted to keep learning and growing. And again, because we were a synagogue, one of the questions that emerged were, what new rituals do we need to create that will help us acknowledge the divinity that's present in this stage of our lives? Most of our religious traditions have a lot of ritual connected to the early phases of our life, but not so much to this new stage. And ironically, many of us will live longer periods of time between marriage and funeral than we did between birth and marriage. And how does a religious tradition help us mark those times? Questions like, what is the spiritual dimension of retirement? How could a church or a synagogue acknowledge that? Or what's the prayer you say when you are leaving the home where you raised your family? How do you turn a chore like downsizing and moving, to a sacred opportunity to acknowledge the blessings that occurred in the house where you raised your family. What about becoming a grandparent? Hugely important for many people of this age cohort. How do we make new ritual? How do we acknowledge those moments in our lives that are very important to us? How can our religious communities help us do that? And how do we create ritual that feel authentic and not just made up? And other issues emerge, like how do I deal with illness, my own or that of my friends, a very huge issue for us as we get older. And what do we need to do to get ready for the inevitable? How do we have those end-of-life conversations with our adult children? You know, as a rabbi of a congregation, the majority of people in my congregation had end-of-life directives, but a very small percentage of them had actually talked about what they wanted with their adult children. How do you have that conversation when it's hard for you and very often your adult children sort of don't want to hear about it? And then other kinds of questions. What will give meaning to my life now that I no longer work full-time? How can I find a volunteer or a paid position to which I can bring my experience, my talent, my passion? How can I live a legacy as well as leave a legacy? And because, again, this is part of my Jewish community, how could a connection to our synagogue make a difference at this stage? So that was the first reason that my husband and I wrote the book. And there was a second, and that is that my husband, Richard Siegel, was the co-editor of a book in 1973 called The Jewish Catalog, a do-it-yourself kit. It was a book that kind of captured the ethos of an era of the Jewish counterculture, and it really empowered a generation of young people, this is the 60s and 70s, to take back Judaism from, as it says in the introduction, from the staid hands of our elders and reshape it for our times. Well, now we are the elders. That was the 60s and 70s, and now we're in our 60s and 70s, and we need a new catalog to help us grow older, with a sense of humor and curiosity, and also with tools shaped by 4,000 years of Jewish tradition. So that's why we wrote the book.
Yeah, thank you. You note in Getting Good at Getting Older, your book, that wisdom doesn't automatically come with age. How can we cultivate wisdom, and as you refer to it, a heart of wisdom, in the second half of life?
So it's very important to acknowledge that it's hard to have a lot of wisdom when you're young, but as you say, getting older doesn't mean that you're necessarily wise. So the activity of acquiring wisdom is a practice. Many of us prepare when we're younger for our retirement. We need also to prepare for our spiritual work of this second stage of our life. And part of it, I think, is really paying attention to what it means to be wise. What does it mean to pay attention to the opportunities that exist at this stage of our life? And what are the practices that can help us do that? So in our book, we speak about meditation, we talk about journaling, we talk about pilgrimage as opposed to travel. You know, it's one thing to take a trip, it's another thing to experience that trip as a pilgrimage, a journey that will help us discover not only our roots, but also what's really important to us. Focus on lifelong learning. How do we continue to learn and gain wisdom through the notion that when you stop learning, you start dying? So wisdom, acquiring wisdom, is a practice. It's not something that just happens. I think it also has a lot to do with recognizing that we're going to die and there's less time ahead than there is behind. And what do I want my legacy to be? And how can I pass the gifts, the blessings, the experience of my life onto another generation? How can I continue to be generative at this stage of my life? So all of that, I think, is about cultivating wisdom and acquiring a heart of wisdom. And it's also acknowledging the blessing that we need to pay attention to what's present now. There's a wonderful psalm that says, "Teach us to number our days. Teach us to pay attention to the fact that our days are numbered, and teach us to make each day really count." That's all part of acquiring a heart of wisdom.
And in addition to cultivating wisdom, you write about the importance of mindset. And I was wondering if I could read a brief quote and get some of your thoughts on that. You write, "Getting good at getting older is not just a bumper sticker. It's a mindset that sees this stage of life as an invitation to a road trip, perhaps even a magical mystery tour." So how do people create and maintain that type of mindset?
I think there are two important characteristics that make for that orientation. One is curiosity, and the other is a sense of humor. We live in a world that sees age as only a process of decline. We live in an ageist culture. Ageism is the only ism that is still socially sanctioned, right? You can make jokes about old people. You can see Hallmark cards. A classic one is there are three stages of life: youth, middle age, and you look good. What do we need to do to change that vision of aging? You know, you hear all the time that 60 is the new 40 or 70 is the new 50. That's really just a way of denying that we're getting older. The truth is that 70 is the new 70. And it's up to us to try to create a vision of what it means to be 70 that is an invitation to a road trip. What is the challenges? What's the opportunity? What's the adventure? Who are the people that I'm going to do it with? How do I give back to the world? If I can continue to maintain that kind of energy and optimism and interest and passion, then it will be a magical mystery tour.
Absolutely. Appreciate that. I'm just mourning the loss of my long sought after Hallmark sponsorship for our podcast. But as we get older, what role does spirituality in our inner life play? And how is this phase of life different from other phases in that regard?
So in some ways, I've already responded to that. But I think the bottom line is that when we are in midlife, we're often sort of too busy to pay attention to the existential questions of meaning and purpose. You know, you have kids, you have older parents, you have work, you know, it's, you don't really have time necessarily to really reflect on the meaning and purpose of life. But now at this stage, again, with the acknowledgement that there's less time ahead than there was behind, I think people are in a position often to pay more attention to those kinds of questions. And those kinds of questions ultimately are spiritual questions. Not everybody defines spirituality in the same way. Not everybody speaks of divinity in their lives. But I think many people at this stage of their life have the spaciousness to be able to think about questions that they perhaps didn't have the opportunity to think about before. And this is why I think that our churches and synagogues and mosques can be helpful to people at this stage by providing opportunities for those kinds of conversations. And one of the amazing things about the listening campaign that we had is that people really talked about important things that they had never shared with each other. Women actually tend to talk about this stuff more than men, but for men especially, it was a hugely heart-opening experience to be able to admit their fears and their hopes and their concerns that they really had never had the opportunity to speak about before or the safety to speak about before. And wouldn't it be wonderful if our communities and our religious institutions gave us the opportunity to talk about those kinds of things?
It's interesting you mentioned men and fear, because that's one of the things that surprised me in this line of work that I do now in retirement coaching, is how often and early it comes up in the conversation. And a lot of the fears that you had mentioned earlier about not being relevant, being invisible in some ways, and not really being as actively engaged as before. So definitely see that in the work we do from a different angle. You mentioned lifelong learning before. And why is lifelong learning so important in your view?
Well, let me just go back to what you just said before. So these fears of becoming isolated, being invisible, being without purpose, and being dependent. It turns out that if you are attentive to the notion of community, you know, my kids live, one lives in Boston and one lives in Portland, and I am in Los Angeles. And if I ever were, you know, in need of them, they would be here in a minute. But the regular day-to-day needs that I have, they're not here to help me fulfill them. I need to intentionally create a community that will be there for me, a nurturing community. And if we pay attention to that, then those fears turn out to disappear. If you work at creating a community, then you're not isolated anymore. It turns out that loneliness is a major public health epidemic. The equivalent, according to a previous Surgeon General, of smoking 15 cigarettes a day or obesity. the quality of life, all kinds of measures, that loneliness is just this epidemic, really, and it needs to be addressed in some kind of way. So how we create communities to deal with loneliness is so important. And in those communities, people are no longer isolated. In those communities, people are no longer invisible when you really know who people are. So, you know, the fear that I had when I was retiring was, who will I be when I'm no longer the senior rabbi of Temple Emmanuel of Beverly Hills? But I have created a community around me of where people see me. And while I'm not the senior rabbi anymore, they see me for the gifts that I have and talents and energy, etc. The issue of being without purpose is really important. You know, what am I going to do all day when I'm no longer working full time? And how we create lives of meaning at this stage have a lot to do with the people that we share our lives with, who help us understand, you know, how we are going to find fulfillment. And finally, the issue of being dependent. That's a fear that people have. You know, God forbid I should ever be dependent, especially on my children. But the truth is that we are never, ever independent. Through our whole lives, we're dependent. And I think the real work of this stage of life is to redefine that tension between dependence and independence into a nurturing, life-giving interdependence. That's really the work. And I think spirituality and inner life have a lot to do with our being able and willing not only to give help, but to be willing to ask for help in the context of communities that we are creating that can nurture us. So that's still the other question. So you asked me about lifelong learning. As I said before, when you stop learning, you start dying. That's why lifelong learning is so important. You know, we think about education as something that happens only on the first third of our lives, but there's no real reason for that. You know, universities developed the way they did for a lot of reasons. What would it look like? And it's starting to happen when more and more people of this stage go back to school. There's all these wonderful programs around the country connected to universities where people can continue to study, some actually with younger people in undergraduate classes, and some programs that are set up just for people of this age cohort. But what a remarkable opportunity it is to learn all the stuff that you didn't have time to learn before, or that you once were curious about but didn't have time to pursue. And now there's an opportunity to continue to grow through ongoing study and also connection to younger people. One of the things that we learned in working on our book is one of the secrets of getting good at getting older is cultivating friends across generation, younger friends, and actually older friends as well.
I appreciate that. And on your lifelong learning point, unbeknownst to you, at age 60, I was in a class that you came into as a guest lecturer. It was a great class in the master's program at the Leonard Davis School of Gerontology at USC. And our professor, Dr. B, if she's listening, will be dismayed to know that I, during class, pre-ordered your book when you mentioned it. But I quickly got back on track. And what I recall from that day when you came into class was a number of things. But I remember that you have done quite a bit of education on transitioning to retirement, as you talked about, through workshops that you have created. What did you notice about people who handle the transition well into retirement? What do they do differently than those who maybe struggle more with the transition?
I think a lot has to do with preparing. You know, I began thinking about my retirement some years before I retired. You can't just like retire and then the next day wake up and say, you know, what am I going to do? It's something that needs to be thought about. Some people are planners, some people are jumpers, but either way, it's a major transition. Best practice almost is to view it like a gap year between high school and college that more and more young people are taking advantage of. You know, before you decide what you're going to engage in, to give yourself time to explore different kinds of things, but to think about it before you actually retire. Again, most people are mindful about the financial implications of retirement, but at the same time that they prepare for the financial implications, people need to begin to think about what are the projects, what are the opportunities that are going to be joyful as I, you know, spend time and perhaps continue to want to make a difference in the world. So all of that is very important, and people who do it well are people who are thoughtful about it and not just kind of wait for what happens the day they wake up after they retire. I also think that a community of people who you can share your hopes and fears with is also important, you know, to to talk all of this stuff through, either with your intimate partner or family, but even more than that, you know, beyond your family into a larger community. There's a wonderful organization called Encore.org, which named this stage and recognized that this is an encore stage. And there's wonderful resources and thoughtful manuals.
Right, handbook. We'll include a link in the show notes to it.
I also think another great resource is nextavenue.org, which is a curated website of issues and articles that, you know, relate to this stage of life. And then, of course, there's the AARP, which is doing some amazing work. So in this alone, there's a lot of people and organizations and resources that help us do it. But I specifically want to call it Encore.org, because I think they're doing really important work.
Absolutely.
Rabbi Geller, you mentioned that this preparation stage, and you said you started to get ready for it perhaps 7 years before you actually retired. And during that time, was it, as part of this, was it building the communities, that the new communities for yourself? Was it, because we all know, at least a lot of people in the background that I have and a lot of friends that I know in the corporate space, they work in their corporate environment, but they forget to build another kind of community outside of that. They just have their work community. So during that time, did you take that time to build a new community?
Yes, in fact, we did. One of the things that we learned in our listening campaign is that the majority of our congregants wanted to age in place. That is, they wanted to stay in the homes and apartments where they lived until they really were frail and could no longer live in those spaces. I can live in my home until I can't climb a ladder to change a light bulb anymore, unless there's somebody else who'll come into my house to change my light bulb. If I created a community in my neighborhood where people were there for each other, then I could stay in my home for a long time. That desire led us to do research and discover the village-to-village movement, which is an important now national energy. Perhaps you've spoken about it before on this podcast, but it started, I think, about 16 years ago in Beacon Hill in Boston, which is a fairly upscale neighborhood, where neighbors got together and decided they wanted to stay in their homes, but in order to do it, they needed to figure out a way to be connected to each other in a way that they could provide services for each other. And they essentially created what is a kind of a neighborhood association where people paid money together and hired an organizer to help them figure out how to do that. So that was 16 years ago, and now there are 200 villages across the country. And there are 200 more in formation. These are neighborhoods that get together to organize this kind of support. So when we learned about this, we thought, whoa, what a great project that would be for a synagogue. And so we created with another synagogue, a village, a synagogue-based village called Chai Village LA. Chai is the Hebrew word for life. So this is a community. Nobody moved. We just kind of drew a big circle around a geographical area and set up mechanisms for people within that big circle to be available, you know, to each other. And so if I have a hip replacement and I need somebody to take up my barrels, you know, I just post that I need somebody and you need to be driven to the doctor or you need help, in my case, building a sukkah, a way that we celebrate the harvest holiday in the fall. I mean, you post what you need and then people come and help you. And in return, you help them in whatever it is that they need. And the other thing that we discovered is not only did people want to provide services for each other, but they also wanted a more intense connection with each other. And so out of this village has grown the opportunities to do lots of different social things together. So, you know, I'm going to the movies at 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, meet me at the Landmark Theater. And afterwards, you know, we'll go out to dinner. And so 20 people meet and they go out to dinner and somebody loves flower arrangements. So she announces that at 2 o'clock on Thursday afternoon, she's going to teach anybody who wants to learn about flower arrangements. So all of these different kinds of activities are going on that are created by the members of the village themselves. And the energy and the social connections have been unbelievably important. And we started building that before my retirement. And now I'm a member of the village. And I just got back from a walk around the park that happens once a week with the members of the village. I could walk around the park by myself, but it's way more fun to do it, you know, in a regular way. And by the way, I do it because other people expect me to show up as opposed to by myself. I might decide, I don't want to walk today. So yes, I do think that you start the planning and creating the community now.
So your book, Getting Good at Getting Older, offers a wealth of beneficial practices or a ton of interesting exercises and a lot of resources that are listed. For someone listening to this podcast who wants to get good at getting older, what areas would you recommend that they start focusing on first?
Well, the book is not a book that you read from beginning to end. It's a book that you turn to when you have an issue that you're dealing with. So, for example, you're ready to have that conversation with your adult children about end-of-life wishes. There's a chapter that talks about how to do that. There is time to figure out how to downsize. There's a chapter that helps you figure out how to do that. You're dealing with an issue with friendship. There's a chapter that helps you think about that. You're ready to explore lifelong learning. There's a chapter that talks about different kinds of options. The book is understood to be a toolkit, a resource. So it doesn't give you all the answers. It gives you questions that you ought to be thinking about, and then the resources of how you can continue to investigate that on your own. So that's how I would recommend people using the book. You know, the sections are Getting Good at Gaining Wisdom, and those are about spiritual practices. Section Getting Good at Getting Along, that's a section about how relationships change. Getting Good at Getting Ready, all the stuff you need to do to prepare for the inevitable truth that you will eventually die, how to get your information together so when you die, your partner knows how to get into your computer. I mean, some of these things are fairly straightforward, but you'd be surprised how few people actually do that, because in a way, we're all in denial. So that's how I recommend using the book. And what's delightful is that once the book was published, it does seem like people are finding it being very helpful. And not just Jews, but everybody. While the book does speak from a Jewish perspective, much of the book is completely relevant to people of any religious background or completely secular.
I can certainly endorse that. I found it to be a valuable set of tools, and I'm sure it'll be a resource going forward. There's jam-packed with useful information and resource in there. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing all of your wisdom and sense of humor. I appreciate all of this. I know people will really get a lot from not only the book, but this conversation as well.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate the conversation.
Thank you. We want to wish you a very happy Hanukkah and a great holiday season. Happy New Year to you.
Thank you very much, and to you as well.
Wow, that was a great conversation with Rabbi Laura Geller. A lot of great wisdom that she shared with us. Dennis, what jumped out to you as some takeaways?
Yeah, thanks, Joe. I very much also enjoyed the conversation today with Rabbi Geller and appreciate her time. Now, a few points. She noted at the end of the conversation today, she noted that her book, Getting Good at Getting Older, can be a resource for people to turn to when they're ready to have or deal with specific issues relating to getting older. So, as she pointed out, it's not meant to be read end to end, but rather it could be a great tool for those important moments in this journey. It was well done. Secondly, she shared her perspectives on this new stage of life, as she called it, after one finishes their career, and mentioned it could last for a long period of time, in some cases 30 years. It can be an active time, it can be a fulfilling time, but it's not without its fears and concerns. And in the work she was doing, she noted that the fears that she saw were invisible, and people being afraid of being invisible, being isolated, being without purpose, and being dependent. And I liked her emphasis on building new rituals supported by religious communities. This can be a very important part of the journey that people take. And she emphasized again the importance of spirituality and religion as they can help people confront some of these fears and provide opportunities for there to be conversations. Next point was when we asked her about who are people that transition well? What are the characteristics of people that transition well? And she mentioned preparation. And she prepared early for this. And I like the fact that it's, you know, we traditionally think of preparation as the financial side, but it's non-financial side that can make a huge difference in this next stage of our life. So preparation was key. She also mentioned community. Ah, and this related back to her fear of isolation. And it was so important that before you retire, you, and I believe this is exactly what she said, you intentionally create a nurturing community This has been echoed by a few of our other guests, and I'm so glad that Rabbi Geller emphasized this as a key to combating loneliness and basically helping us with the other aspects of support, our fear of, about lack of purpose, and our fear of being dependent. Finally, my last point related to her comment about, we hear that 70 is the new 50, but I liked her challenging us in that 70 is really the new 70. There's an implied acceptance of the number and a challenge for people to create a vision of what it will be for them. The types of challenges and opportunities that they would really like to figure out for themselves, who they're going to do it with, when they're going to do it, and how they're going to give back. So in my view, it's an important mindset shift, and I like the 70 is a new 70. So Joe, what about you?
So I'm very grateful that you took time to talk with us because, as I mentioned briefly, first encountered her in a class I was taking, which happened to be the best class I've ever had by far. Wow. It was a course called Mindful Aging, taught by a very special professor who was outstanding. But one thing that she did that was unique for me was she exposed us to each week an outside speaker who gave us a different perspective on a particular spiritual tradition. So over 16 weeks, we got this broad array of different speakers, different backgrounds, different perspectives that I'll never forget. It was very, very helpful to me. And Rabbi Geller stood out to me right off the bat. You know, person of substance, had a lot of insights, a lot of wisdom. And today, what jumped out to me was first the wisdom point. That's not something that comes with age. It's not a passive thing. This is an active sport, gaining wisdom. And I loved how she talked about the practices you need to engage in and build it throughout those. And I thought that's very useful. Secondly, talking about being thoughtful and planning for retirement. Start early and start thinking about it. Think about things that are important to you. That was useful. And then recognize the fact that it's not a solo endeavor. There's a lot of interdependence. She talked about the village-to-village movement, which is very interesting to hear about, and 200 places now. So really the community, and you can build community, you can build interdependent relationships, which benefit people in many different ways, both in terms of giving and receiving support. And then she had these four things that she didn't talk about in one cluster, but mentally I started to combine them. And these are things that she mentioned, like energy and optimism, curiosity, sense of humor. So she talked about the first two, energy and optimism. It's really, you know, traits that are critical in being generative, continuing in later life to be generative and add value and be engaged. And curiosity and sense of humor, great things. You can see how that can really fuel happiness. And she, just like Helen Dennis last time, mentioned joyful. So those are two people that had that element, which you don't really hear tied to retirement very often. And I think that's very insightful. And then finally, last but not least, she talked about the spaciousness that this phase of life can offer to be able to give you the time to start to focus on things like spirituality, questions about meaning and purpose. And I thought that was very well said and very valuable.
Well, thanks, Joe. Yeah, that wraps up our podcasts for this year, 2019, our season two. And we couldn't do it without certainly all of our guests and listeners. And we want to wish them all a great holiday season and a very, very happy new year. And we thank them very much for everything. We'll be coming on to season three in the first part of January. And we welcome you to stay tuned and for those episodes coming up in an exciting season three. You know, if you want to, you can help us out by liking us and subscribing to us on Apple Podcasts. It's easy and it's free, and we very much appreciate it. So have a great holiday and see you next year.
Thank you for joining us today on the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast by subscribing to them on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com.